Just one game this week, the 1-0 win over Notts County. Jonathan Ditt thought it was a thoroughly enjoyable game, with Crewe on top for the first 60 minutes before tiring. Their high line meant the ball over the top was always on. Cresty Road Ender thought it was a good game between two sides who will be up there at the season end. And with the battling spirit, we are always likely to win more than we lose. Paul Gregory agrees. Some character in this team to grind it out after the effort of the Derby game. Ben Benson thought it was end-to-end stuff with a great performance from the back five. Max Bailey saw an entertaining game. First half, Crewe on top. Second, they looked more likely. Definite pen, not sure what they were moaning about. Adam thinks it's seriously time for them to start deducting points from clubs. Al Roberts thought we might have paid for not taking our chances in the first half, but defensively, solid all game. Colin Higginson agrees with this. We should have capitalised from them overplaying in the first half, but overall, an enjoyable game with decent football from both sides. Dylan calls it a heroic display with our threadbare squad. What a team Lee Bell has created. Sean Rogers calls it a good performance, not solid, but good. Joe disagrees and says each and every one of them was superb. The Reds are going up. Joe points out our record of played 4, won 1, drawn 2, lost 1 against the big 4 is a decent return. Graham Miles says Connor Thomas was immense in a very good game with a fantastic result. A great defensive display, but we are down to the barest of bones. Brad Budden also had Thomas as man of the match, but adds that Cooney played his best game for us. Luke Bevington says it was a team that didn't want to be beaten. O'Riordan and Offord were massive. Danny Phillips says Offord and O'Riordan had Langstaff and McGoldrick in their pockets the whole game, and there wasn't a player out there who worried him. Craig Fisher didn't think it was smash and grab, but with the squad at breaking point, it was a fantastic result, summed up by O'Riordan's block on McGoldrick. James says fair play to Harvey Davis. He's been a critic, but he was brilliant today. David Royal asks, where are all the Davis haters today? Ash Cowley thinks Davis is improving every game and was pleased CBR got his goal after putting in a proper shift. John Dickinson said it was all made sweeter by the rubbish officiating, the sour opposition fans and the crazy amount of added on time. Paul Taylor thought it was a game of two refs and he preferred the second one. Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Railway Men podcast. Just the one game to go through this week, the 1-0 win. I'm not really sure it's going to be a short chat, but we'll do our best. To do so, today I'm joined by three Crewe fans and an extra panellist. They are, firstly, the Crewe fans, Tim Robinson. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Stu. Hi, guys.
Trevor Griffiths. Hello, Trevor.
Hi, Stu. Hi, everybody.
And debutant Henry Lewis. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Stu. Hello, everyone. Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. We're also joined by Gab Sutton. Hello, Gab. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, everyone. Good to be on.
Henry, it's your debut today. People will almost certainly have read your articles on the website, but it is a tradition when you make your debut on the pod to give your Crewe Alex supporting credentials.
So, yeah, I started coming to the Alex in 2004. My first game was against Cardiff in the Championship, and we got a pretty creditable 2-2 draw that day. I have kind of been unlucky since then in the fact that that's kind of the highest I've ever seen us. It's sort of gone down and down from there. And I also learned very, very quickly that you never, ever, ever get our best player on the back of your shirt as a birthday present, because in my case, my birthday's in December. Got Ashton 10 on the back of my shirt. In January, off he went. So I learned the hard way in that one. But as everyone here knows, there's been a lot of ups and downs over the last sort of 10 to 15 years. But it's been a good ride. I can't lie to you. It's been great.
Who's on your shirt this year?
If I had to pick one player, I think it would have to be Tracy. Another number 10. He's been so, so good to watch. He's absolutely electric.
Fair play. Right, we're going to get into the game then. Let's start with the lineups. Something I remember saying a couple of weeks ago is that the bench we've had so far this season is really strong. When players take knocks, the ones that we have coming in, I think, look more than capable. but it is who we then put on the bench to deal with that. We saw that last week in the FA Cup, not being able to name a full bench. And Tim, it is a bit of a worry when Lewis Billington, with his one league game and four cup appearances, is in the top half of seniority on the bench for a league game, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I look at the sort of three senior players with Billington, as you mentioned, and Colquitt and Finney, if we count Finney as a senior player, had something like 100 league minutes this season between them. And that was pretty much all Finney for some of his sub appearances off the bench earlier on in the season. So, yeah, it was a worry. I mean, the one bright thing was I wasn't expecting Tracy to play. So the fact that he was in the lineup and he'd recovered from his knock was a real positive. At least you kind of felt that we might cause him a few problems. And I think, you know, a couple of us who talked before the game mentioned that we basically had to do it with our starting lineup. You know, there was little chance that someone was going to come on and necessarily change the game. You know, and we've had that a lot this season, subs coming on and changing the game, but it didn't look likely when we saw that lineup. So yeah, it was worrying. Albeit, I thought the starting lineup did look okay.
Trevor, you, I presume, are like me and listened to last week's podcast. And when producer Dave interviewed the Notts County fan, they said, you know, you've got injuries, we've got injuries. And a point Tim made this week was, yeah, that might be true. But when we have injuries, we bring on a 17-year-old scholar. When you have injuries, you sign Dan Gosling, ex-Premier League regular starter. That was sort of the case looking at the two squads, wasn't it? That, you know, we've got a lot of youngsters and they've gone out and just spent a bit more money.
Yeah, and I found that he said that they don't spend money a bit tongue-in-cheek, I would imagine, because I'm sure David McGoldrick's not earning £800 a week. But so,
Trevor, I get the point. I think the argument would be that although Notts County, you're right, they have spent big money on in terms of their star players, they've actually not spent an awful lot in terms of depth. So they're back at midfielder behind Matty Palmer, who's now out for the season, and John Bostock, who didn't quite make it, is a 36-year-old Jim O'Brien. Okay, I appreciate that, you know, they bring in Dan Gosling as a free agent in the week, and, you know, that's, you know, they're lucky to be able to do that. But I don't think they've invested a lot in terms of depth, I think would be the point.
Yeah, they're not a Wrexham and Stockport, are they? You know, by any means.
Yeah.
So, but I get the point that I thought they were, their bench was stronger than ours.
Yeah.
And everybody around me, and I sat next to Mark Birtles regularly at home games, and we said the first 11's fine. Once they tire, that's when we're going to maybe have problems. And, you know, we'll talk about how the game went later.
Let's get into the game then. Henry, I'll come to you. You've just mentioned Shiloh Tracy. I was like you. I was a bit surprised to see him start yesterday, Tim. But Henry, I thought Crew started off really, really well. And one of the things they were doing very well was setting traps for Notts County and then sort of capitalising on sloppy passes, poor touches. And we were using that to create chances. And it was just a shame that when they did fall to Tracy or Rowe or CBR, we couldn't quite capitalise on them.
I think yesterday in the first half was some of the most enjoyable football I've seen Crewe play. Not just the playing it from back to front, but like they say, it's strange to see us pressing high and making the use of it as well, and you know, winning those balls back. I thought Rowe did really well for that. I thought Connor Thomas was excellent, actually. He was making a lot of tackles and turning the ball over and getting us going again. And obviously, Tracy just kept on picking it up. There was one where he took it on his chest in the middle of the pitch, and then before you knew it, he'd gone past two players and he was kind of clean through. And there was two or three occasions like that. It's a shame, and I think we all knew this about Tracy, that he's going to make those chances, and he's rapid, he can take players on. However, it's when he gets into the box, and we saw it obviously with Dan Ajayi as well, and eventually he became a goal-scoring machine. So I think we all hope Tracy can do the same thing. But to watch Crewe actually set traps for a team and press high, it's not that often that we see that. And we did it so effectively in the first half. And to be honest, I felt as though we should have gone in to halftime 1-0 up at least, really.
It's a mark of a well set up team, I think. We've talked about this on here before, but, and you know, I think the example I gave was Doncaster Rotherham a couple of years ago in League One. When we played them, they knew our passing patterns. They showed us the passing patterns that they wanted us to use, and then they intercepted it or pressed us when we used that pattern. And we were like that yesterday. We kind of showed Notts County where we wanted them to play it, and then funneled them into an area, boxed them in, and won the ball back. Certainly, first half, that was the way the game was going. And, all credit to Lee Bell and Ryan Dicker, I'm sure, is involved as well. I thought we looked like a really, really well set up team yesterday.
Gab, can I come to you for an objective opinion on Shiloh Tracy? I've got two perspectives, and I want to see which camp you sort of fall into based on what we saw yesterday. The positive.
You're not just
fan
giving
would
your
say,
own opinion; you're offering two opinions.
Oh, I never give my own opinion.
Give everyone else one.
So, a positive fan would say he was all over them. He was a constant threat, even though he's playing with an injury. You know, he trained very little this week. Whereas a negative fan would say he's had a lot of opportunities to do better with what he had. You know, a lot of opportunities to score or to assist. What did you see in Shiloh Tracy yesterday, and what have you seen in the past? How far has he come?
It's a great question. I think Henry summed it up quite well. I think as much as I did think his sort of end product and decision making was a little bit raw, which, you know, let's be honest, it is League Two. You do kind of have to allow for that sometimes. But I think I'd probably go on the side of crediting Shiloh Tracy, because it actually wasn't a given that he was going to. I think Tim made the point at the top of the show that he might not have been on the pitch at all. So for him to make an impact, I think he was a bit of a thorn in the Knox defence, certainly in the first half. I think you've got to credit him. Obviously, there's more to come, but hopefully that'll come with maybe as he ease himself back from injury.
Trevor, I'll come to you for the man on the other side. And, you know, obviously they were switching quite a lot. Aaron Rowe, we haven't seen a lot of him since his loan from Huddersfield. I will give an opinion here, Gab. I was expecting a little bit more from Aaron Rowe yesterday. I think he was willing. I think he was persistent in his tracking and his wanting to do well. But actually, output on the ball, I think there's more for him to come.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If you don't play a lot of minutes at first team football, it's you're trying to make an impression. You're trying to maybe try a little bit too hard and you get caught in between the two. But I thought he did well. First half, I thought he was great. As we said, with setup was terrific. They'd obviously seen what Notts County do. They play from the back with the three centre-halves. We stopped that. If you notice, as the game went on second half, their goalkeeper was kicking it long, which actually played into our hands because their two forwards were never going to win any headers. So they were only open the second, they got the second ball. But yeah, he needs time. You know, he needs minutes on the pitch like all players do. The more you play, the more confident you become, more relaxed you come. But playing in spurts, I would imagine he'll play Tuesday night, so it'll be another chance for him. But whether he starts regularly, that's down to the manager.
A player who is now getting a lot of minutes, and I was going to come on to him later, because I think he was in the conversation for man of the match. I don't think he was my man of the match, but I think he was in the conversation. Someone who is now playing, taking advantage of injuries, was Joe White. Gab, I'm going to come back to you because it was someone you picked out, I saw when you were tweeting last night, as having a very good game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really interested me actually was in the first half, Joe White seemed to be more defensively responsible, I suppose, or be given that responsibility more so than Connor Thomas, because when I sort of looked at the lineup initially, I was expecting it to be Connor Thomas to stay deep because that's the kind of role that he's had in his more recent spells at Cheltenham Town and possibly when he played last season. And actually, Joe White, I remember him at Hartlepool, he played right of a midfield three. They had a sitting midfielder called Nicky Featherstone, and White was sort of given freedom to sort of explore. And I was kind of expecting that to be the dynamic, but actually, on those turnovers, it was actually Connor Thomas sort of popping up into the final third and White staying deeper, which on the one hand, you're maybe getting White and his quality stepping onto second balls and things like that. But on the other hand, I'm not sure Connor Thomas is usually comfortable when it comes into those sort of attacking situations, although all credit for him to him for getting in there. But yeah, it's an interesting one. It seems like he's sort of taken on a bit of a different role.
He's got a nice left foot, and I think he's got a good future in the game because he does sometimes, he carries the ball well. I think yesterday was his best game, to be fair.
I think the balance in centre midfield was much better as well yesterday. I think it's been a bit of a worry when it has been White and Tabana together. I think two younger lads and both quite sort of attacking minded. They're good passers of the ball. I mean, they can both tackle, but primarily I think you'd see them more as creative players. So I think when I saw the centre mid partnership yesterday, because I remember against Stockport, you know, we really struggled in the middle of the park, and I think that lack of experience really showed. Whereas yesterday, I think they were more solid. They were winning more tackles in the midfield. I think White is an excellent player. I really, really do. I've really enjoyed watching him play for us, and Rue as well. To be honest, I know they offer different things, but I think White has been a really, really good signing. And as it's turned out with the injuries, you know, especially to the centre midfield, it's been really good to have him in there because he does bring something different. He's got that sort of bit of Premier League class in his sort of his first touch, his passing. He's, you know, he's not afraid to drop a shoulder and take a player on as well, which I think is really, really important.
I think White's decision making is the thing that makes him stand out. It's very rare that he makes a bad choice about the pass that he makes, or you know whether to keep the ball. And I think you know that is a mark of a you know a player that's used to playing with Premier League footballers day in day out. I do think he's very very similar to Tabana. You're right, Henry. And yeah, I think it was at Harrogate, wasn't it, where those two played together as a midfield two, and we maybe did look a little bit lightweight in there, but I think they both are progressing as footballers very, very quickly, and I'm really, really excited to see those two together in midfield. I think you know it could give us some real quality on the ball, and I think both of them are sort of developing the sort of naughty side to the game as well. You know, neither of them seem afraid to get stuck in. And whilst you wouldn't say either of them are sort of ball winners naturally, I do think the way they're progressing and the speed they're developing, you know, I think it would be very exciting having them two as our centre midfield.
I think you've got to be a bit of a ball winner, Tim, as well, if you're playing in a two-man midfield in Crewe's system, because I don't think you can get away with being a sort of luxury player because you've got so much ground to cover.
Sure, my point is, like, you know, they're not naturally that, but that side of their game is developing. You know, we've seen Tabana, you know, from last season where he wasn't putting too many tackles in and was mainly used as a winger, to this season where he is developing into a sort of natural set of midfielder, and all aspects of his game are developing very quickly.
Yeah.
If only we had a manager that could teach them those skills, you know. Right. One of the things I heard on commentary yesterday with Pete and Graham was the fact that Joe White is only a 6 month loan, and it sort of reminded me that this is up. It's up in January, with him getting regular minutes and with him getting, you know, 90 minute games now and putting in performances like yesterday. Should this be Lee Bell's number one priority, getting on the phone to Newcastle and saying, let's have him for the season. Look how much he's progressed. Keep him with us. This is what we're doing for him.
I think so. I think we need to. I think with Powell being out for so long as well, I think we will struggle. You know, as soon as we lose White, I think we'll notice it straight away. And Powell's done for the season now, isn't he, pretty much? So I think we definitely need to be getting on the phone to Newcastle and keep him involved at the club.
Midfield is probably the area where we're lightest at the moment. So you would imagine that either finding someone else or extending White's loan would be a high priority. I mean, to be fair, Connor Thomas was excellent yesterday, I thought. But it's probably the area of the pitch where we could do with reinforcements.
You wouldn't be saying, oh, well, you'll have made your decision now on Joe White. I'm sure Lee Bell's that. Whether it's in place, I'm not sure, but he's enjoying his game. We're enjoying it. I would imagine it's a done deal, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I mean, Arthur Okonkwo would be the obvious comeback to that, wouldn't it, Trev? You know, he was enjoying playing football for the Alex, and then look what happened.
To be fair, they are in the table, I think, personally. I think if Crewe are still in the promotion picture in January, I think that massively increases the chances. But I think if they drop off between now and January, I think maybe there's that thought of we'll send him up to more of a top-end League 2 side. That's how I think some of these clubs will be thinking.
At this stage, I don't think White's shown anywhere near enough to be taken away from us and sent to, well, you know, a League 1 side or a top-end League 2 side. That was probably, as Trev said, that was his first game where he's really, really sort of looked like he's at this level. You know, you look at Arthur Okonkwo after his first five games, he was clearly a keeper that was probably too good for this level, although he somehow ended up back at this level. Whereas White hasn't quite shown that yet. Maybe he will between now and January, but it's not at this stage.
Just to pull you up on that, Tim, we are a top League Two team.
Correct, Stu.
Okay, we're going to come on to the refereeing team in the second half, I imagine. But something that annoyed me in that first half, Henry, was I think the referee stopped us from having a better chance at a corner when he stepped in the way of Rio from a corner up to the edge of the area, and Rio had to shift out of his feet. That was quite a good opportunity, I felt.
Yeah, the referee did a few strange things like that. He was kind of getting caught, you know, sort of in the way of players. And yeah, I think this is where Rio kind of stuck it to the back stick, and I think he overhit it ever so slightly, and he might have got a better cross away. I mean, especially given the cross that he put on to CBR's foot last weekend. So yeah, I think the referee did some strange things. And also, I don't know what you guys all thought about this, but I felt as though Shiloh could have had a penalty in the first half. And I think he made a meal of it, but ultimately the defender slid in, completely missed the ball. I think Shiloh made sure that he got the contact, but nonetheless, it's a bad tackle in the box. He's off, you know, he's on the ground, he's slid in, and he's missed the ball. And I do think we could have had a penalty there, to be honest. But generally speaking, the referee did make some strange decisions, but for the most part, he did let the game go. And there was maybe a few like yellow cards that he could have shown that he didn't show. But yeah, I do maintain that I think we should have had a penalty in the first half.
I thought it was a penalty, and I think you're absolutely right. Generally, I think the referee was pretty good, but he was definitely lenient. There were a few occasions where, you know, where players get away from a defender and the defender just hauls them back, you know, sort of takes one for the team. Normally, they are 100% of the time yellow cards. And there were a few of them on both sides
He booked offered straight away for doing that, didn't he? Offered did one of those and immediately showed a yellow card. And I kind of thought, well, this is what, you know, the rest of this game is going to be like. And then from there, he didn't do that anywhere near as much as I expected.
I mean, I think he could have booked Aaron Rowe about four times, but there were certainly a few of theirs that got away with what I thought were definite yellow card challenges as well. So, I mean, to be fair, I'd much rather have a referee that's lenient and lets the game flow and maybe lets one or two challenges go, as long as they're not dangerous challenges, and doesn't book players, than one that's too far the other way and is pulling his yellow card out every 30 seconds and stopping play every 15 seconds for nothing. You know, I really enjoyed that first half. I thought it was a cracking game of football between two good teams.
Watching from afar, which, you know, is my normal weekly routine, I thought he did have a fairly good half. And I think what you said is correct. I think what he was trying to do was those free kicks that players buy, you know, Perry NG being a perfect example, or Travis Johnson, or, you know, any crew right back, it seems, is really good at buying a cheap free kick. I thought he just wasn't giving them yesterday, and he did it for both teams. I think you're right. He did book Luke Offord. In fairness, I think that was a pretty bad tackle from Luke Offord, and he was racing away. It was quite late, quite from behind. But I thought he did do quite well. It was just that one little thing. I was like, just move out of the way. He didn't say make any movement to move out of the way of the corner. Trev, I'm going to move on to a second set piece with Courtney Baker Richardson back stick by himself. It had gone over the keeper. Oh, he had to put that one away, didn't he?
Yeah, looking back, yeah, at the time the keeper actually got a touch to that and sent it a little bit higher. But yeah, looking back, he should score there. He's got above the ball and it's gone over the top, whereas you should be just putting it back from where it came from. So yeah, but the keeper actually got his hand to that.
It was a little bit like an NFL where the defensive team just got a little tip on it from the quarterback just before the receiver's going to catch it, and it throws off the receiver. It was a little bit like that. I think without that little tip from the keeper, the CBR just nods that in.
Yeah, I thought he was... he was up there as the central focus yesterday, and it's difficult when you've got three centre-halves. I thought he had a decent game. You know, he missed a couple of chances, but I thought... He occupies centre-halves, and I think at this level, if you're occupying centre-halves, it doesn't let them play. They obviously wanted to play out. We set traps for them on that respect, and I thought he worked really hard up top.
He worked really hard, I agree. I think he showed why he probably has never really succeeded at a higher level, because I thought, in terms of quality, I don't think he had his best game yesterday. I mean, there was the one where he was clean through and it got stuck under his feet, and then he touched it too far out wide, and then it was a pretty weak finish in the end.
I appreciate that. That was like a really, you know, not a great moment. But I would also say, I don't know what you think about this, Tim, maybe it wasn't quite his type of chance, because if you think of Baker Richardson, he's quite a physical centre forward. He likes to facilitate chances for other players. If you ask him to carry an attack individualistically, I don't think that really works for him, because he's certainly not very quick, and I wouldn't say he's particularly skillful. So I think it was just more a case of just that particular moment just didn't really suit him.
Yeah, I'd agree. It wasn't. I mean, that might have been one for Tracy or Rowe, ideally. But there were a few occasions. And to be honest, I think Rowe was probably the biggest culprit. But I just kind of thought, once we got into the final third, our decision-making was pretty poor from all three forwards. Our link-up play wasn't great. You know, we got into some brilliant positions, and then it seemed to be the last touch or the last shot, the last cross, didn't quite work yesterday.
Okay, so Gab, you've come to watch fifth versus second in the league, top scorer versus second top scorer. It's half time, it's 0-0. What were your thoughts on watching the first 45 minutes?
First 45 minutes, I think, kind of disappointed a bit. I was a bit disappointed with Notts County in the first half, although they showed kind of flashes of why they're a top side. I think from Crewe's point of view, I'm really impressed with how you're able to press. I think a couple of you have alluded to that already and created those chances in transition. And possibly, I think if you'd had Chris Long on the pitch in that first half, I do wonder whether you might have gone ahead. I don't know what the panel think of that.
When we mentioned about the Baker Richardson chance, I do think there's two other strikers that we have that maybe both would have scored. I think Nevitt, especially the form that he's been in, and certainly the goal that he scored last weekend, similar, obviously that was on his left foot, this would have been on his right, but I think honestly Nevitt races through him and smashes that in the bottom corner.
Yeah.
And possibly Long as well.
It would have been more Nevitt's game, I think, than probably Baker Richardson's, I think.
Yeah, and he did work extremely hard, like you said before, but it was, he struggled a little bit, and those two big chances that he had, it was disappointing to not see him put them away.
Okay, we got into the second half then. Trev, I thought Crewe played better than Notts County in the first half. I thought second half, it became more even and possibly even more Notts County than Crewe, but we kept them at bay. Really, there was a couple of chances, but was this the Crewe first team running out of steam and then Lee Bell looking at what options we had and not really seeing much, do you think?
Yeah, the front three tired a bit, especially Shiloh and Rowe, because you haven't had minutes on the pitch. You go back to it, the more you play, the more stamina you've got. Yeah, they ran out of things, and we let them kick it longer. They weren't, the centre-halves weren't playing it like they were. The keeper was knocking it long, which played into our hands, to be perfectly honest. They were never going to win headers against O'Riordan. I think he won every header. Dimitriou, they won every header. So we sat deeper. We were more of a five than a three. So they couldn't get round the outside very often, apart from Jones did once or twice down his side. I thought Crowley got on the ball a lot and started to dictate it a bit. But it was all in front of us. So the keeper did well, came and got what he needed to do. I think the only chance I thought they were going to score is in the first half when Offord gave it away and Longstaff had that shot and the keeper got down and saved it. Other than that, I wasn't really thinking, well, how are they going to score? And I thought we sat back, invited them on a little bit, and I thought it worked well. To be fair, they got some good players, but I don't think they could work out how to beat us. They weren't going to beat us in the air, lobbing balls in the box.
Yeah.
So everything had to be on the outside.
That's true, although I do feel like I can't quite remember off the top of my head, but I do feel like Notts did have, a couple of big chances. I agree, Crewe sort of kept them at arm's length really well in the circumstances, and I really admire that. But I do sort of feel like they had maybe a couple of moments that were a bit of a close shave.
Well, Longstaff had that one he curled round the post, did he? But that's 20, 25 yards out. So
I thought there was a back post header at some point that Notts County had as well. I don't know if anyone remembers.
The one McGoldrick got in, didn't he? And O'Riordan came across and blocked his shot.
There was one where I think Demetriou got a little bit caught out of position, and then there was a right-sided defender. I couldn't spot who it was, but it was a right-sided defender that kind of just came across and put in a brilliant challenge.
Yeah, that was O'Riordan.
That was O'Riordan, Yeah,
I thought he was immaculate yesterday.
Yeah.
For the young lad, I thought he was immaculate.
Did anyone else think that Langstaff effort had gone in?
Yes, I totally thought that was good. I thought it was curled in and just nestled into the net, yeah.
I couldn't understand it for a second. My brain wouldn't compute it because the Notts County fans all went, ooh! And I was like, why are they saying ooh about one that's gone in? It hit the stanchion or the post behind the goal and then nestled into the sort of back of the back of the net.
What I found with that is normally when opposing fans think a goal's gone in, the other fans go, way. I don't think any Crewe fans went away because it was like they thought it had gone in as well. So
it took my brain like 2 or 3 seconds to realise that it hadn't gone in.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching it on the iFollow camera, and because it's just that one camera set in the middle of the pitch, you don't really get to see those quite close. But the amount of distance that must have missed the post, if it's hit the inside of the stanchion to bounce that way, it must have been millimetres. I think we got quite lucky with that one. I'm glad you mentioned Conor O'Riordan, Trevor, a couple of minutes ago, because when I said I thought Joe White had a good game when he was in the conversation for Man of the Match, he would nowhere have been my Man of the Match, because I think Mickey Demetriou got it in the ground. He would have been third out of the three central defenders if it was up to me. I thought Luke Offord was, once again, incredible. But I'm saying that every single week at the moment. But he was not Man of the Match yesterday. Conor O'Riordan put no foot wrong, missed no header. And that block alone won it for me.
Yeah, I agree. I just, if you watched him in isolation, it was a perfect performance. He won it, like you say, he won every header. He had Langstaff, he had McGoldrick. McGoldrick actually came over to the bench and said, can you stop knocking the ball in the air? Because I'm not going to win anything against him. And because that was somebody I knew quite close to the bench. He came over to the manager and said, can we stop knocking it onto my head? Because I'm not going to win any against these. Which said it all.
Yeah. And for a 19-year-old lad to be, correct me if I'm wrong, lads, but I think Conor O'Riordan's now one of the first names on the team sheet, which I think is astonishing for someone that's, 19 years of age, 20 maybe?
Yes. He's such a presence. He's just, you see him when the teams line up, he's absolutely enormous. And, as well as that, he's quite mobile. He's obviously great at heading the ball. He looks very calm. He looks assured. I mean, he's probably learned that in a lot of ways from Offord, because Offord always looks very, very calm on the ball, never looks phased. Even though he picked up that early yellow card yesterday, Offord didn't really have to change his game at all. He was still, touch tight the whole time. And Offord was fantastic yesterday. I think
I tell you what, I really like the dynamic with Offord. You've got two really solid, reliable centre-backs, I think, in Demetriou and O'Riordan. And I do think that kind of allows Offord to play a bit of a, like you said, touch tight, a bit of a man-marking job on David McGoldrick. I thought he did really well with that. And he can sort of sometimes play in defence, but sometimes play almost in midfield. And I think that flexibility, I think, is massive for Lee and Ryan in terms of just adapting to different challenges within games, because sometimes you might want to nudge Offord into midfield, and I think his aggression makes that transition seamless. So I think you're absolutely bang on to bring that up. Yeah,
you're right there, Gab, because he does move in to midfield when the opposition are putting a bit of pressure on. He's got his two centre-halves behind him. He can go and pick up the 10. If somebody's playing with a 10, he just drops in there and gives you an extra midfield player, because sometimes you're playing with a 3. I think he's so calm. He doesn't panic. He lost the ball in the first half, but he carries on. His temperament is perfect for the level he's playing at.
The other thing to note about Offord was the fact that he was playing on a booking yesterday against two of the better forwards in this division. You know, he picked that booking up pretty early on, and then, you know, the whole of the second half, he had to be impeccable, and he was. And Gab's right, you know, he moved into midfield. Whenever McGoldrick dropped deep, Offord moved into midfield. And I said about Reardon, you know, Mark and Langstaff wouldn't be the easiest for him. You know, it's not the sort of striker that you'd expect Reardon to have a huge amount of joy against, but I thought he did a very, very good job. And you know, even Langstaff ended up trying to come deep to get the ball yesterday. And you know,
McGoldrick certainly did, by the way, Tim. I mean, you know, in possession, he had to drop into midfield at times, which I think shows, you know, how well Crewe defended.
Well, you know, you'd say Langstaff's best chance was probably that 30 yarder.
Let's not forget as well, Conor Reardon, although I mentioned the block, he almost got an assist if Ryan Cooney had put slightly less on that lob for that ridiculous ball over the top. I think we spent enough time now talking about the game before we get to the main course. The 92nd minute, Notts County have got the ball in their own half. The referee blows up. I'm not sure why. The camera pans to the ref on his haunches, hamstring injury going off. And then on comes the fourth official and you think, right, you've got 2 minutes left. Don't do anything controversial. It's 0-0. Everyone's going home. Tim, what happens next?
Well, it's another long ball over the top. Keeper comes flying out. I think gets something on it, but it falls to Cooney again. God knows what he's doing up there, to be honest. Again, twice in 2 minutes. And he lobs it over the onrushing defender, or tries to. And, it makes contact with his arm or his elbow. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of changes to the handball rule recently, and I don't agree with all of it, but one thing I do agree with: if you're rushing out to stop a cross, or you're rushing out to stop someone's shot, and you spread your arms out like a heron taking off to try and make yourself big and block the cross or the shot, and then it hits your hand or your arm where you've made yourself big on purpose, then that's handball. It's absolutely clear cut, and that completely applies in this situation. The guy jumped in the air, waved his wings as he was taken off, and the ball hits his arm, and if it doesn't, it goes in. So, it's absolutely stonewall. The ref didn't give it, first of all, which, I mean, maybe because he was the fourth official and he'd just come on. But, you know, the lino sees it and raises his flag and says to the referee, it's a penalty, and then he goes back and the ref gives it. And part of me was like, was he just waiting to see whether the ball fell to a Crewe player? Was that why he didn't give it immediately? Or, you know, I was a bit confused because, yeah, I mean, it looked absolutely stonewall in the ground, and it does when I've seen the replay as well. But yeah, the Notts County fans didn't really seem to like the decision.
Just before anyone jumps in, Tim, surely he rose to take off like a magpie.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, that makes more sense with them being the magpies and all. Good one.
But yeah, I think that gap, it was 2 seconds. Like, there is a gap, but 2 seconds is 2 seconds. And it was just thinking time, which I think we can all agree is a good thing for people to have. Gab, you're obviously invited on as an impartial outsider to Crewe. You're just a fan of EFL football. I'm just going to quick straw poll. Trev, penalty, yes?
Yes.
Henry?
Yes.
Producer Dave?
Yes.
Gab, tell us why we're wrong, if we're wrong.
I've no idea. I pay very little attention to refereeing decisions.
Fair enough. I mean, after that, though, it's just bonkers. I'm watching it on iFollow, and I said to my wife, right, there's a penalty. We're already past what the time should be for finishing. And 20 minutes later, she said, what have you been doing? Because the game was still going on. Henry, can you sum up what happened after the decision to give the penalty, CBR scoring it, and then just absolute nonsense?
Yeah, it was a farce, wasn't it? There's no other word for it. But part, obviously, when you're in the ground, you're blaming the officials, and you're like, come on, pull it together. It can't be that bad. But then the reality is, like, a lot of very, very angry football fans stood a couple of feet behind you. It's not a very pleasant environment to be in. And it honestly, it got to a point where I thought, Are they sort of trying to get the match abandoned? Are we, you know, we've just taken the lead in what's been quite a nervy second half, and just assumed that the what was going to happen next was all of a sudden it was just going to be match off. We'll have to replay it or something. We were obviously, like all of us, we were stood there for absolutely ages, just clueless as to how long it was going to be before we actually got going again. But to go back to the ref pulling his hammy whilst Notts County were on the break, I mean, I did feel bad for them. And it kind of makes me feel as though the Salford incident that we had, when obviously they broke away and scored, I feel like that wrong has kind of been righted by what happened yesterday with the ref kind of pulling up as they were. I don't know whether they were, you know, whether they're going to score, because they're on the halfway line. They're all the way over on the far side. But still, it was yeah. If that happened to us, I'd be absolutely livid. And to be honest, I think that is what fueled, you know, their anger with the fourth official, because I'd be fuming. But it was a penalty. Let's be fair. It was a penalty. But yeah, I was very, very glad when the game did eventually get going again. I think they had to swap the linesman as well. I think the linesman from our side, from the main stand, came over and sort of took the brunt of it. A lot of police seemed to come down as well. And all we wanted him to do was restart the match so he could blow his whistle and end it, to be honest.
There's a serious point to be made about the Notts County fans. You know, this isn't a few kids running on the pitch when there's a goal, you know, exuberantly. This isn't throwing flares onto the pitch. This is attacking a match official. I mean, if the EFL don't do something quite significant as a punishment to Notts County for this, then it makes me wonder why they're even there, because, you know, you can't have match officials being attacked when they give a decision by fans. It's just ridiculous. Has anyone on this panel ever heard of them having to swap linesmen from one side to the other because a linesman's been attacked by spectators at a professional football match?
I think that's why they were so reluctant to do it, because of the fact that it sets a dangerous precedent that, oh, well, if we can just do that, then we'll just do that. And then it opens the door to allow intimidation. I think that's why it took them so long to reach that decision to just swap the linesmen over.
You know, we've had a few very, very weird goings on. I mean, you know, going back to, as Henry said, about the Salford game, And even like, you know, Gillingham making six subs in four windows last season in one game. But I mean, this is ridiculous. Spectators attacking a match official in a game, that is so far past the line, it is untrue. And the EFL have got to do something about that.
Yeah, I'm glad, Henry, you're on today, actually. And you've given, I think you gave the Notts County fans far more credit than I was going to, and far more credit than I would have sort of opened the door to. A referee pulling his hamstring. There's no conspiracy there. He's just pulled his hamstring. That's part of life. Footballers do it all the time. Of course it can happen to referees. I don't think they've got a single player in Crew's box. I think the closest they've got to our penalty area is the man on the ball who stood next to Lee Bell on the halfway line.
Yeah.
Get over it. Stuff happens in life.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
The penalty is a penalty. I don't know what... the Twitter... reaction yesterday and the reaction at the ground was unbelievable. I think, you know, if I was to get on my high horse and I was going to get on my soapbox, I'd talk about the breakdown of society and everyone talking about, oh, I want this now, and the petulance involved with, like, everything should it that happens to me is a conspiracy. It was just people who allowed themselves all to be wound up in a situation together where they all start to believe that this whole conspiracy was the officials, worst officials ever. I'd like to see what they thought was so bad about it, really, in the cold light of day. I know
I'd like to make the point, though, Stu, that this is true of all football fans across the nation.
Of course, absolutely.
It's not a thing against Notts County, yeah.
No, of course, absolutely. But yesterday, as Tim said, it's gone too far, you know, like attacking a linesman so that he can't do his job. We all, you know, I try and not talk about referees as much as I can on here, because, I mean, I did it for a year. There's a reason I did it for 1 year and then didn't carry on. I was called all sorts of names. I turned up. I got paid £30 for 90 minutes of abuse. And then I went home and tried to just shake it off. It's crap. Like, it's really crap, you know, and I was quite good at it. And I say that with the evidence of I did it for 1 year. And because of the reports I got, I were asked to linesman the County Cup final. So they don't ask new referees to do that for a for no reason. And I was still every single week. It was absolutely crap. And if we're doing this to professionals to the point where they're intimidated, I don't know if things were thrown at him. I've heard that they were, but I haven't seen anything that was. Where are we going? You know, what do we have to do? Do we want to go back to the 1980s and put nets up and, you know, cause all those sorts of tragedies that happened there? Like, we just need to grow up a little bit. It's a game of football. It was a penalty. Just, like, let's deal with it.
The referee's report will make interesting looking at, because he was there a long time after the game. So he'll be writing that out, and it'll all come out what actually happened. Something must have happened to the linesman. He wasn't just getting abuse, because he wouldn't go within 10 yards of him, the original one. So obviously something had gone on. And it took that long. If I was the referee, I'd have just said to the linesman, go and stand on the halfway line, blow me whistle, the game's over. Because it was that late, and nobody was going to argue, because we knew that it was 90-odd minutes, 94 minutes had been played anyway. I felt sorry for, because he was obviously the fourth official, he was the referee, and having to deal with it. The main referee, he came on the pitch and was talking. The police took, they were obviously outside the ground, they took a while to come in. The stewards can't really manhandle anybody, so them fans are giving the stewards stick and whatever. But like you say, if you're assaulting match officials, you've no chance in the game. I've got a grandson who's refereeing this morning. He's just 15 the other week, and it's his first season. And I've said to him, anybody gives you any abuse, just deal with it there and then. Don't stand around and accept it. Deal with it. Tell them to leave the ground and whatever. But
that's a big ask, though, for a 15-year-old lad to sort of take on like a 40-year-old man or something. Yeah. You know?
Well, that doesn't take any prisoners.
No, he's not allowed to referee at that level at the moment. He does games at the academy.
So do you mean abuse from the players then, rather than from the fans?
Well, from adults who are on the touchline.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. So it's like for a grown man, you're a 15-year-old lad,
yeah,
and you're asking him to have a go back at someone that's given them abuse. Well, like, that's intimidating.
Yeah, not go back. Just put it in plain English that if you continue with this, it will be in my report and your club will be in trouble. And
yeah,
locally, they have respect people who are at the games looking for this sort of thing that's going on now, which is good. But I've said to him, don't take it on. Just explain to him anymore and your club will be in trouble. And you're stopping these young lads, he's refereeing 13-year-olds this morning, enjoying a game of football. Because it does happen. You know, let's be honest. To be fair, he is good, and people have said that he's good. But that's a different matter. And this is why they won't referee open-age football anymore. In the local area in Crewe, there's games called off because they've got no referees.
Yeah, well, it's not an appealing thing for people, Trevor, because I think if you're a ref, like, if you're a player, okay, it's one thing, you get the stick if you get something wrong, but you also get the glory if you do something right. If you're a referee, you get the stick if you do something wrong. No one gives you any glory if you do something right, because you're just the neutral. If anything, you're still going to get a stick, but from the other side. So I don't think it's an appealing proposition. I don't think referees are very well trained. I don't think they're very well supported. Certainly not very well paid. And I think that it's like, what's the incentive for someone to start refereeing as a career? Because I can't see it at the moment. I think the FA's got to do something.
Right. I think producer Dave's probably had enough of referee chat for one editing session. So I'm going to move on. So Henry, just before we move on to the game coming up this week, we haven't actually talked about the penalty itself. What did you think of CBR's effort?
I have to, you have to give him so much credit, because as we've alluded to, the two chances in open play that he had, he missed, and he battled really, really hard all game, CBR, and it was tough for him at times. He won a lot of headers, he held the ball up well, but I must admit, even though he's our number nine, when I saw him, you know, putting the ball down to take the penalty, I was a little bit concerned, and I think there was two other players, I think White was one of them, I'm not sure who the other one was, but it seemed like there was a discussion of who would take it. But then the more I've seen this morning, I'm not sure if that was White doing the thing that Trippier did earlier in the season, where he kind of deflected and he made it look like it was going to be him to give Baker Richardson the sort of peace of mind to just focus on doing the job. But, you know, all credit to Courtney because it's a brilliant penalty. The keeper's gone the right way and he's absolutely slotted it. And I'm so happy for him. I'm so happy for him because he battled all game and he gets to come away with the match-winning goal. And yeah, he really deserves it. Really does.
You're absolutely spot on, Henry. That was definitely what White was doing. He held the ball. He made all the Notts County players think that he was taking it. He absorbed all their sort of mind games and put off tactics and all the rest of it. And then when the penalty area was clear, he put the ball on the spot and CBR came and took it. And yeah, you're right. Absolutely superb finish. Brilliant goal.
Right. Next, we're going to turn our attention to the FA Cup replay coming up on Tuesday. But first, we'll check in with the women's team who were in FA Cup action of their own against Sporting Khalsa on Sunday.
Okay, Matt, it's the end of our cup run. How are you feeling about the game?
Proud of the girls' efforts. You know, we knew it was going to be a tough challenge coming here today. We had a plan. The girls executed the plan really well. But it was a game that we thought would hinge on a pivotal moment. And it did. In the second half there, we created one of the few chances. And if that goes in at 1-1, it's a different game. But unfortunately, it didn't. Keepers made a good save. And then they've gone up the other end and a bit of a lapse in concentration on the transition. And what could have been 1-1 becomes 2-0. And the game looks very different. So, disappointed because you always are when you get beaten, but proud. I don't think the girls could have given us much more other than the result. You know what I mean? They've given us everything they can.
Excellent. And standout performances. I thought Hannah had an amazing game.
Yeah. It's games like this that we knew would hinge on pivotal moments where you need your big players to come and perform. And I thought Hannah was brilliant. I thought Shanice was really good. I think obviously Khalsa had a lot more of the ball. So defensively, we were always going to be looking for big performances in that defensive area and the defensive midfield area. So yeah, Hannah and Shanice were class.
That's cool. And so we're out of the cup now. Where are we next week? We're at
home to Tranmere. Yeah,
Tranmere. Right. And I'm interested because the we look at the league table and we sort of see not propping up the table. That's not fair. But I see a lot of other teams that we've had really close results with, mm-hmm. quite a long way above us. And I think it's quite interesting that it's been a much closer season than the table might suggest. I think.
Definitely. I think the standard of football at all the tiers, women's football, is improving. Mm-hmm. I know in the 5 years I've been here, there was always, until about 18 months ago, there was always your front runners in the league, and there's a big gap between the bottom half of the table. That's not there now. So yes, it doesn't look good when you look at the league table and we're down towards the bottom end. But I think we're like 5 or 6 points away from top three. So it's all well and good saying, we are a couple of good results away from turning that league table upside down. It's our job to go and get those results. And that's the plan now. The cup's been brilliant. It's been nice financially. It's magical. It's the FA Cup. But now all attention turns to the league. We've got a run of games where we know the opponents. We're going in with a plan. And we believe the team we've got, We can execute that plan. It's maximum points. That's what we need now. We need a massive run before Christmas, and that league table looks different.
Absolutely. Matt, thanks very much.
Cheers, Rob.
Cheers. Okay, so after last week's heartbreaking last-minute draw with Derby, we're back in action on Tuesday night. Trevor, are you excited for the replay?
No. It's perfectly honest. I think, we won't be putting a stronger side out of yesterday. I can't see Tracy being wrist. Thomas was, his calves were stiffened up at the end. So whether they'll risk him, I don't know. It's a good chat. It's a free hit, isn't it? At the end of the day, we had our chance at home. If we go there, perform, we did it at Sunderland, but Derby have a different proposition. We're missing Conor O'Riordan. So there'll be a change of shape. So I would imagine Billiton will come into the back three if we're going to play that way. So we're down to the bare bones.
Henry, do you think we've had the opportunity now? That first game at Gresty Road was the chance to go through.
It definitely feels that way. And I know this isn't a particularly good thing to say, but when the second went in, I kind of was like, I'd almost prefer them to just finish us off at this point and not have the extra game, which I know I shouldn't really be saying that. But yeah, because of the injuries and just knowing that we're coming into this period now, when you sort of get into winter, December, January, it gets brutal. And any extra games we could do without, I'd obviously love it if we win and progress. But yeah, it's we had our chance and we didn't take it, unfortunately.
And then, Tim, my last question was, do we rest players or do we wrap them in cotton wool? But listening to what Trev's just said there, we might be struggling to get 11 players on the pitch.
Yeah, possibly. I hadn't considered the fact that Raiden would be missing as well. But as far as I'm concerned, we haven't got a game next weekend. The Morecambe game's off. So we haven't actually got a game for 2 weeks, really, other than this derby game. I don't see any reason why we can't go for it. I mean, I'm a firm believer that you only really get one bite of the cherry at a giant killing, which is what that would have been. So there's every chance they'll score an early one and beat us easy. But I don't know. I just kind of think we've got an opportunity here to go for it with no game at the following weekend. So we should. And this team has shown, you know, courage or cojones, however you want to put it, by the bucket load. So we've played three decent teams in our last three in Stockport, Notts County and Derby, and we've given a good account of ourselves. So I say let's go for it. The other thing to note is that we should make a decent amount of money from this game. You know, it's only a tenner in, but they'll maybe get sort of, you know, 12, 15,000. So 45% of that's a decent bit of revenue for the club. So let's get a big sellout attendance there. I think they've given us 800. We should sell that out, no worries. I've got my tickets and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Tim, last question then. Score prediction?
It's going to be 2-2, and then Crew are going to win on penalties in front of 800 rabid travelling fans.
Okay, Henry?
Tim has made me feel so positive after everything that he's just said there has completely changed my mindset, and I really respect that, actually. So we're going to nick it. We're going to win 2-1.
Okay, Trev, to bring us back down to earth, I feel.
I'd love us to go there and turn them over 1-0, but I think it might be 3-0, the derby.
Mm. All right. I didn't get the guys from Rams Talk back on because obviously they were only on last week, the preview of the game, so I didn't ask them back on. So what I'm going to do instead with my time is to say to everyone, make sure if you're not going to get to Derby on Tuesday, or even if you are, do get yourself down to the Alex on Thursday for the FA Youth Cup. Tim, who are we playing on Thursday?
It's Baldmere St. Michael's.
And who are they?
They are in, I think, the Midland Alliance or something, but they're a sort of well-renowned academy side, and they won away at Chesterfield in the last round, so they shouldn't be underestimated. Free entry, 7:30 p.m. kickoff. Be nice to have a few fans in cheering the boys on. I'll be there.
I'll be with you.
Okay, make sure you get yourself down to Gresty Road Thursday night. To finish off today, we are going to have a little chat with Gab about the League Two season so far. Lastly then, Gab has been with us all day today. So we've spoken about the game, but I now want to turn your attention to the season as a whole. Gab, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Apologies. Are Crew going to finish 18th?
Might be a couple of places higher than that, Stu.
Just in case anyone's not sure what I'm talking about, do you want to just explain quickly?
Yeah, so in my season preview where I profile all the teams in League 2 and do my 1-24, I'm normally quite accurate with Crew Alexandra, by the way, because I predicted your last promotion season. I had you, I think it was third that season, so when very few other people it did. And I also had you going down, which I got a little bit of stick from one or two from a couple of seasons ago. And that turned
one
turned
of them's on this
correct.
Call, I believe.
They might be.
Saying nothing.
um, But no, I might have to fall on my sword this season because yeah, I thought, do you know what? I thought Crewe would get better from like a developmental and stylistic point of view, but I was kind of quite conscious that the league itself is getting stronger and whether Crewe might actually slip down a few places. But no, you've had a fantastic start to the season, so yeah, all credit to you.
To be fair to Gab as well, 18th was probably one of the higher predictions that I saw from a lot of the experts.
Yeah, I saw a few. I mean, not the top 20 is the one that sticks in my head. I think they had a fourth bottom, 21st, I think they put us in for their season preview. So, yeah, absolutely not the only one. I think 4-4-2 had us down at the bottom as well. From what we've seen, then, it looks like it's going to be the big spending teams at the top, you know, Stockport, Notts County, Wrexham, Mansfield. Do you think that this Crewe team, this Crewe squad, is going to be able to keep pace? Where do you think, you know, they should be aiming for?
Depends how you define keep pace. I think in terms of top three, I do expect it to be three of Notts County, Mansfield, Wrexham and Stockport. And I think it's going to be a bit of a bloodbath for the rest. And I think Crewe will feel like they can be part of that bloodbath, really. Having yeah, doing incredibly well. I still think actually, from a stylistic point of view, you're maybe a year or two off being, you know, at the level that, you know, of the sort of iconic Crewe sides of previous generations. Still quite early in terms of if we go to the cycle, if you like. But no, I think you're sort of ahead of schedule at the moment. And I think, yeah, okay, a season for fans to just enjoy the ride, really. But it looks like progress is going to be made either way, and that's fantastic.
I think I'd agree with that, Stu, and Gab. Like, if you look at, we've played all four of those teams that you mentioned now, and we've won one, drawn two, and lost one. And you could argue we should have beaten Wrexham away as well. So we've taken 5 points in the four games. So we've shown that we can keep up with them over 90 minutes. But I think you're right, keeping up with them over a season is a different matter. You know, we've seen how threadbare we get when we have a few injuries, whereas those teams have got much better prepared, or not better prepared, but more resources in terms of squad depth. You know, I think Wrexham have got two or three players that they couldn't even fit into their first team squad. So yeah, keeping up with them over a season is going to be very, very difficult. So, Gab, what do you reckon, playoffs?
Yeah, I think you're certainly in the conversation for the playoffs. I'm a big fan of Barrow, actually. And I think they could be, I don't know if you've played them yet. But no, I think they could be quite strong. I think MK Dons, now they've got a manager with sort of different ideas, I think could push on. I think you've got a chance for the playoffs. I think if you finish in the top 10 this season, I think that would be a fantastic achievement. So yeah, I think you're making real progress, and I think it's just a case of if you do achieve massively ahead of schedule, that would be absolutely amazing. But I think not that I want to police what Crewe fans should think about their club at all, because that's not, you know, that's not the business I'm in. But I would also sort of try and keep things a little bit guarded. That's what I would, that would be my perspective on it, just because you know, you are massively overachieving what was expected from the season. And I hope that, you know, Lee Bell hasn't raised expectations so much that top seven becomes a sort of benchmark, because yeah, I think a top 10 finish with the stylistic and developmental progress that's being made would be amazing.
I think that's very, very salient points, very eloquently put. But I'm going to disagree with you completely. All aboard the promotion train for Alexandra this season. We are going up. No, I think I agree with what Tim said, because I think we've played Wrexham, we've played Notts County, we've played Mansfield, we've played a lot of the big teams up here in the top of the division now. And I think there's one team that was arguably head and shoulders above everything else that I've seen. I don't watch a lot of League Two football other than the teams that Crewe play against. That's how I spend my Saturdays and my Tuesdays. Stockport were better than us. They were better organized. They were better drilled. They were better players. I think they were fitter as well. I don't think I would say the same about Wrexham. I think Wrexham have a collection of very good players, but as a team, I don't think they were any great shakes. Notts County I mean, they've got two very good strikers, but they didn't really look like they were going to score yesterday. And Mansfield, we played on the first day of the season. So, you know, they're almost definitely not playing the same that they played that day. My feeling is the same as Tim's. I think the thing that's going to stop us doing well this year, other than money, is the squad depth. I think, you know, we are at the bare bones at the moment, but we played Stockport, we played Derby, we played Notts County in the last three games. We've won one, lost one, drawn one. So we're not doing too badly. I think, you know, we can pretty much hold our heads up high. I think we're 6 points clear of eighth place at the moment. So we've got a little bit of a cushion in that playoff place. I think that's where we should be looking at realistically. But then I am absolutely seeing that through red spectacles of a Crewe Alex fan.
I think that's a fair assessment. I've seen the games that we've played in. Colchester were a good side. Wimbledon were a good side when we played them. But they're inconsistent. Mm. What we are at home is we're consistent. We don't lose many games at home. Mm. Our away form's improved. And I think that's what it is, consistency. If every squad now was fit till the end of the season, nobody had any injuries in all 24 teams, we would be in the playoffs. What's going to determine it is how long Long's out. Powell's obviously out for a while. Tabula, players like this, where the other players who played yesterday are on the bench, so when they do get tired, they come on. That's the difference. And I think January will be a crucial month. If we could stay in the top seven between now and January, I think we'll be there or thereabouts. Because everybody else below is inconsistent. There's nobody. Accrington had a good run and have fell away. Yeah. Like you say, Barrow are now coming and on a good run. So I'd expect them to be in there. The top three and four, I think, is done and dusted. I think it's fifth, sixth and seventh. And I think we're in with as good as chout. As long as we don't get any more injuries. If we get any more injuries between now and then we could drop away. But
do you think you'll be able to bring in the players you need, Trev, in January?
I believe so. I think there's things that they're doing now that could possibly see us do that, yes. I don't think we'll be splashing a great lot of cash, but I think we'll be highlighting players that can come and make a difference. It is, as you say, it's the bench. At the end of the day, it's how strong your bench is. Mm. Is how you're going to do. Like Notts County, like you say, missing Palmer and Bostock, it is a big miss for them. And like they got Gosling come on, and obviously he's not capable of doing 90 minutes because he's not played a lot of football. You know, we're looking at free agents at the moment. And if you haven't played for 2 or 3 months, it takes you 4 or 5 games to get anywhere near. Mm. By that time, we're into January anyway. So then you could be able to look at players on loan or even permanent that have been playing. So it's a catch 22. But yeah, if every squad didn't have an injury between now and the end of the season, I think we're in the playoffs. It's injuries that are going to tell.
Okay. I think I'll end it there for another week. Tim, Trev, Henry, and Gab, thank you all for coming on today.
Cheers. Thank you.
And Gab, if anyone wants to find you on social media, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can drop me a follow at Gabsa and lots of EFL discussion on there and lots of video and written content you can find there as well.
We will be back next week, hopefully with something a little special. So until then, goodbye. Bomb, 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 bomb